Hey, everybody, in this episode of the Comic Book Exchange, we're going to get up close and personal with the Letter Boys, the cartoonists known as Jeremy and Daniel, next.
This is Book Circle Online, featuring in-depth discussion, insight, news, and commentary on all the world's leading book titles and their authors. And now, Book Circle Online.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Comic Book Exchange right here. This, of course, is a show where we get together every single week to break down all the great comic books that you can find in your stores every Wednesday, or maybe on your digital storefront. We also talk to the people that bring these comics to life, and that's who we have in studio today. We have two people that decided, you know what, we want to leave behind these really well-paying jobs and pursue the incredibly lucrative world of comics and cartooning. So and they've done it. They've done it. They've been incredibly successful. They've got a series that they're teaming up with Maker that is called Gifted. We've got that going on right now. Highly Gifted. And they've also written for Adult Swim, or many other properties as well. We're going to find out all about it. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Jeremy and Daniel Lair.
Hey guys.
Yes.
Thank you.
Great to be here. Thank you so much, guys.
There you go. Look at that. Now, of course, doing all this interrogation for the next 60 minutes, so we've got the highly assembled panel, the highly esteemed panel that we have here. Another first here, Lucretia Lyons.
Hey guys, I'm Lucretia Lyons. You can always find me at LACRETIALYON anywhere on the internet, since there is only one.
And I am Lex Michael, who is also here. I am all over social media at the Lex Michael.
And of course, folks, if you like us on Facebook, give us those 5 stars on iTunes, subscribe to the YouTube channel. There you go. Give us a thumbs up while you're there. Why not? There you go. You can also hop in the chat as well. Lucretia's got her computer up and running, which means the chat is up and running too. So if you have a question that you'd like to ask Jeremy and Daniel, now is the perfect opportunity to do so. So, I kind of just made fun up there at the beginning, it's like, all right, you kind of left behind these jobs that you have to pursue cartooning. But clearly, if you're going to pursue something like that, that interest had to always kind of be there. What was kind of like growing up? What were kind of like the first kind of comics or cartoons that kind of really kind of grabbed your attention?
Oh, I loved Kathy and Mary Worth and Rex Morgan.
Perfect.
The usual. Everybody. The best.
Everybody.
The best. Family Circus.
Yes.
The witty, irreverent, weird stuff.
The crazy stuff.
Yeah. Well, because I know that you guys, as said here in the info, that you kind of tease about who's going to read The Far Side first. But it was also the rest of the Sunday comics as well. I mean,
I always felt like the Sunday comics was a minefield of shit. Like, there was a lot. Yes. Of looking back at it, I mean, what was
there were different tiers. There was like Wizard of Id, right. Somewhere in the middle.
Acceptable,
yeah.
You'll read
it. But Far Side was at the top, and maybe Calvin and Hobbes.
Right.
Had a special.
Yeah.
Those were the greats, and those were the ones where you look back, they're still great.
There were some that I'm a little ashamed to have loved, like, let's say Garfield, where it's like, the pizza, the pizza, the pizza.
Lasagna. Yeah.
What did I see? The lasagna. Yeah. Sorry. Jesus. Right, and Odie, and this and that. All right. But it was, we loved the Far Side, but it was very accidental. We never thought that we would go into, I don't think, cartooning. He was a corporate lawyer. I was in Italy working for Ducati Motorcycles for a while, for like 5 years.
We went through a long period in life where we were convinced we were individuals. And eventually we came to accept the fact we weren't. And that was when Daniel came back from Italy, and then we started...
Yeah, being twins is an interesting dynamic, because I think growing up, we were so eager to make sure that everyone knew that we were different, where like, he played oboe, I played flute. It was like, that's a double reed.
It's
a woodwind. not even close. Not even close.
Well, and you both went to Columbia, but you pursued law. And at what point you said, you know what, I want to make sure we're not even doing the same professional kind of career track.
He knew it was the wrong thing. It was one of those de facto moves. It's like, law.
My first day in law school, my first night, I remember I didn't have a bed yet, and I was just slept on a hardwood floor, and I cried myself to sleep. But I stuck it out.
I mean, I've certainly had friends that have kind of pursued that and get to the end, and they graduate, and they're like, why did I do this?
Right, you didn't ask that really important question.
Right,
earlier.
I should have asked that first.
That's why you just do terrible on the LSAT, like I did. And then
it's a blessing.
Yeah.
It's a blessing.
Yeah. I wish I had done worse.
Exactly.
There are people that he knew that would go through, like when he first got to this big corporate law firm, who were like, it's nice to see you, it's nice to meet you, you're a very funny guy. They didn't say that, really, probably. They said, yeah, you're a great guy, you're a wonderful guy, but I won't be here next year. I'll probably be gone, I'm not going to stay here that long.
And they're still saying the same thing.
20 years later.
Same guys are still saying the same thing. Right. One more year, one more year. So it was kind of one of those things where taking the plunge and leaving was very difficult, because his benefits are the bathroom down the hall.
Right.
I knew that it was the right thing. Otherwise, every year I would take one more year.
There are certain signs
you'd never make the plunge to do what you really wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. Every night for him was pad thai and weed. You know, where you at a certain
that's still
point.
That's
mine. That's the dream. Is that not the dream?
That's wonderful. Listen, yeah. That can be one of two things. Yeah. That can be awesome or oblivion seeking behavior. Just pat tie and weed and then just donk.
So, I don't know, between the two of you, who buckled first and called the other and said, maybe we should be doing something else?
Here's what happened
right now.
I was in Italy. You're not going to assimilate as a Jewish American in Italy. Italy doesn't assimilate anyone. So after 5 years or whatever, I was like, am I going to be one of these weird expats who just keeps living out here, like one of those guys in Cambodia or wherever, just like sees your parents once every 15 years or whatever.
Wearing a tight, weird suit.
A linen suit. A full-on linen suit like Anthony Hopkins in that movie where he's Hannibal Lecter in Florence.
Yes.
Like, they couldn't find him. He was all in white with the fedora.
Yep. Right. He was the first person you'd see
right,
off the
exactly.
plane.
Anyway, so I knew I wasn't going to do it forever. And I wanted to. I had thought I was going to be a novelist back in college, more like pretentiously. And I'm not a solitary guy. It's like we're very verbal. We're conversational. And I still didn't get it, though, after Italy. I came back. I tried to write again, like what I thought would be the novel. The only problem with my novel is I had no idea where it was going. Other than that,
it was like 2,000 pages.
It was great.
Just kind of meandering around America.
I kept writing myself into a corner, a bigger and bigger corner. And then after a while, like after I was like, clearly this book has like, it was like this giant ball of something. Jeremy was like, you want to do something together? I was like, yep.
And yep. I was so ready to leave the law firm. So it was kind of like, let's do it. Jump in.
Right. Did you kind of give yourselves like that backdoor, hey, we'll try it for 6 months, and if it doesn't work, we'll go and do something else? Or like, we are all in no matter what?
I think increasingly you realize you're all in as your CV starts to gape.
Yes. Right. If you need binoculars to look to the last item
right.
on your CV, like, I guess it's.
Right.
Make it to the other side, or it's like being an explorer. You either make America at a certain point, or you're dead.
Or it's like being in a 747 with bingo fuel, where it's like you're over Greenland. You've got to get to London now. There's no going back. Yeah. You have enough fuel to go this way.
So, you have Instagram. So a great platform. Is that the initial idea? It's like, we could put something on, like get a web domain, put something online.
Do you know what it was? It's endless waiting when you're doing shows like... We developed a show with Amazon that didn't ultimately go forward, but it was 8 months of waiting for the contracts alone. Mm. 8 months.
And you think every day it's going to come through. And at a certain point, we're like, you're just waiting here. What
just
are we
here.
Doing?
Right.
This is insane. Right. So we started doing the Instagram. And at first, you know, it's like we were, you know, nervous to post anything. Like, oh, what are people going to think? And as you get more comfortable with it and build, you're
also,
like...
Our aspirations,
hairy balls, and the things we do on a regular basis, and feel fine with
exactly.
That.
There was one. There, I fell into your guys' Instagram page for a little while over the past couple of days, and I was struck by. At first, actually, now that you brought up the Far Side reference, I completely see it. But my first thought was, oh, these like one panel stories. It's almost like New Yorker cartoons, but I get them, and within. Each of them, I felt like there's like a little world in every one of these little one-panel cartoons. And the one that really maybe sparked in me an existential crisis, I was looking at my phone and I was like, oh, Jesus, I gotta sit, is this one that you guys did where it's Wile E. Coyote, and he finally, after years of being humiliated by the Roadrunner, decides he's gonna take his own life, but the gun he uses is an Acme product,
right.
And it fails him. And I was like, this is maybe the bleakest of possible endings for the Coyote. I'm gonna go take a break. Either for a few
right.
minutes.
Life. I was sad. Some of them I was kind of sad. I felt just out of it. Couldn't really speak well. It was just off the whole day.
But I feel like too, like that's a great example of what I felt like I kept seeing in a lot of these one panel cartoons is that there is in almost every single one that I saw this hint of this bigger world outside of this one panel and this whole story that could be told. Again, like using the Coyote one as an example. It's like, this is the greatest, bleakest Looney Tunes motion picture that Warner's will never let you make, but I need
Thank
now.
You. I don't want to brag.
Best compliment ever.
Yeah.
Behind the balls, there is sometimes a point.
As in life.
On VH1.
As in life.
You know, I think part of it also is that we... blab nonstop with each other. So a lot of times on these comics, there's a whole world of blabbery behind
years,
it that,
years
that maybe
of,
subtly
of
infuses it. Right. So
conversations.
It has a narrative feel, I think, sometimes.
Yes.
And I know we talked beforehand, but to mention my favorite would be kind of the opposite, showing how small a world can be, is 2017. Bubble technology is developed, allowing universities to finally shield their students from the insensitivities of the outside world.
That is something that we see all the time, yeah. Which is that the idea of being offended has gone from when I was little, who gives a shit, you're offended, which is, that's fine.
Right, deal with it.
You. That's for you. I hope you get over that. Enjoy. To now a, you know, a legitimate kind of thing that should preclude you from doing what you do.
It's almost
the highest value. Right, higher than creating or higher than creation is my offense. And so, like, you'll have people who will DM us like, I am waiting for it to come down. For example, we did a cartoon that was really silly. It was just Mahatma Blondie instead of Mahatma Gandhi. And he's got the iconic Gandhi thing, but with this stupid little blonde curly and mohair or whatever. And all of these people were writing in like, this is the father of our country. Take it down, whatever. It's like,
I think
that's fine.
Half
taboo
of India,
for you, not
half
for
of
us.
India wrote us. And then we had to go to witness protection.
Right.
It was a little hairy.
So when you start doing the, who, in terms of the artistic drawing side,
I do everything.
All right. There you go. Jeremy called it, so it's his.
Yeah, I said it first. You think he buzzed in first?
I buzzed in first.
Did he really buzz in first?
Yeah, I felt like he was a little quicker on there. So, all right.
He was born first. Maybe
so, Daniel, if you want to just slide over, we're just going to focus
on Jeremy. You could actually leave.
I do get lunch. I don't know if that counts.
It's a mix. Sometimes there'll be one that is mostly me or mostly him. Then there'll be ones that are actually drawn by both of us. Then there might be one that he conceived of more. But
he'll draw it.
I'll draw it, or we both. It's a back and forth dialogue, so it's really all over the map.
Sometimes we'll be supportive to each other. Sometimes you'll be like, that's shit, I don't get it. The only thing you have to watch, we've learned you have to watch out for is you might call shit on someone's drawing and then it gets tons of likes and stuff and then the person will be like, yeah, I thought it would do well. I was just saying that, you know, I saw what it was. I was just saying that I thought it could be in a different way.
Also one of the advantages and the disadvantages to being a twin is ruthless honesty. So there's no, because we've had other collaborations and I'm sure as you guys as collaborators, there's a lot of like, if someone has an idea you don't like, there's with other people, it's a lot of like, you know, that's very interesting. I think that could be good for a later show. Why don't we put a pin in that?
Right.
And all sorts of subtle dances. Okay. Whereas here, it's much more like, that's terrible. You know, because it's basically like talking to yourself. So there's pros and cons to that. But I think overall, it just cuts through.
It becomes pros once you get old enough that you don't
let
care.
Go of ego.
You let go of all the ego shit that all the arguments that we had early on about, I conceived of it. You merely developed my conceit, so it was initially mine. Where it's like, what are we doing? This is exhausting. We're going to kill ourselves. We have many years to go.
Once I won those arguments, we were able to let go of them.
Yeah, I was talking to my brother today, and he was like, you know, being an adult now, I learned that I don't know shit.
Yes, exactly.
Which
it's
a
wonderful
relief.
Freeing acceptance.
What a relief. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, in this BuzzFeed article that you had, they basically described your Instagram account as a love life, the universe, and jerking off.
It's actually a quote from us. That's how we did it, and then they just repeated it. That's how I would like to be known. I want that maybe even on my tombstone.
Would you truly? Is that how you would rank it? Those four, or would you put jerking off towards the top?
Jerking off towards the top, because jerking off is a metaphor for everything anyway. It's what creating is.
I think they're all
literally.
They're all thrown in together.
Good point. Pretend that it's not really jerking off. Right. Smart, brother.
Another Jared Lyon quote is, the world is just one big jerk-off fest. You know?
Yes.
Yeah, it is.
Yes,
yeah,
it really
that's
is.
What we're doing it right
is.
Here. It's like, you know, you come into our show,
no,
you
I
talk
literally
about your thing.
Am right
like,
now.
Yeah.
I literally
this is
the
circle.
Yeah, that's why we have the camera up here, guys. I
also no one like, knows.
Yeah. I like how Lucretia is essentially her brother's hype man.
Yeah.
Like, her brother will just say things, and she'll go like, I gotta blast this to everybody. So I'll get texts at like 2 in the morning, being like, check out what my brother said about religion. And I'll be like, go on.
Go on.
You know, he's too big of a pussy to be on social media, so somebody has to share it.
Well, speaking of family, though, when you tell your family, like, hey, you know what? We're going to give up our jobs that we've been pursuing and doing this, and we're going to go in and we're going to start doing cartoons.
Right.
Are they like, what? What are you guys doing?
They were as supportive as parents maybe can be. The role of a parent is not necessarily to be 100% like, that's great, do whatever you want, son, or whatever. Like, there is a level of skepticism, or are they going to pull this off? Or, by the way, we haven't yet. But, by the way, there are certain, let's say, markers that give you a bit of credibility that don't even really matter to you. Other than that, you can walk into a room and not be like, eh, you know, kind of like feel like you're not pulling your weight or whatever. Mm-hmm. All right, you reach those signposts, everything starts to calm down. But there were kind of funny moments with my dad, let's say, who and other people mm-hmm. who they would really try to get us to make calls or get yourself out there, show it to people. I got an idea for you. Can you do this? Can you do that? I remember once he came back from a dinner party he had with some friends, and he went, I was at a dinner party last night. I met someone I want you to call. He's an agent. I was like, what's the name of the agency? I can't remember. I said,
what's the guy's
like,
name?
And then he thought, he's like, yes. Then he goes, the Preminger? Preminger? I said, there's a Preminger agency. He goes, I said, what's his name? I don't remember.
I didn't talk. I talked to him for 2 seconds.
He said, and then I was like, Dad, I can't. What am I going to do? He said, just call. Say that there's an agent there. Your father had dinner with him last night at the, whatever the address is.
There was a lot of that. Like, then, well-meaning. Right. We're from a very loud, big Jewish family. So there was a lot of, like, ideas. Like, I got it. Lots of loud ideas.
A lot of competition.
Yeah, it was
people like, I'm writing
sweet,
a book. I'm writing two books.
So, for you, what was in terms of doing this, taking kind of your career in your own hands? You started using the Instagram account, started doing your cartoons. Did it make much easier in terms of opening doors for yourself once it started coming up? Once it started taking off,
it's kind of like it's crept up on us. You would be doing it for, let's say, it's coming on just about 2 years, but we started with like 50 followers. We didn't think that it would necessarily even be that big. What we loved was we had a creative outlet and something to do every single day. We had a mission. You go in. We're writing a script later. We're in development on some show. Great. But every day we have this to do, no matter what. Right away, it felt right. Even though the first cartoons, the ambitions were different. Like, the very first cartoon I drew was like a crayon pencil kind of drawing of a farting hot dog. That was it. It didn't even make sense. I mean, right. But gradually, things started to line up. Of course, it feels good to be able to directly talk to an audience. What we really like about it is you so often get caught up in developing stuff with a lot of stupidity and a lot of risk aversion,
but
both justifiable and idiotic.
It's also having a degree of control where, sometimes in your development, you'll go through a spiral for a year of development where people will take you down a road and you end up in the same place you were. And, you know, everyone talks about they're good executives or bad executives. But, you know, we get to be the stupid executives here.
Right.
You know,
we're the idiots. I'm the idiot executive.
There's no one to blame. We're the idiot executives. We're the idiot studio. We're the idiots. Right. So that's what I love about it.
Yeah.
Well, I got to mention, it's a great calling card for you as well, too, because people who want to get in business with you, they have a way to find out what your sensibilities are, what your take is in comedy. Like, all right, yeah, these are guys we want to work with.
Yes. Although it's a mixed bag in a way. We're writing, doing a script. We did a script for a show version of this, which would be kind of like a Monty Python-esque animated show, which is just a look into our minds where you take the 10 sketches and weave them together in weird ways.
And kind of blow them out in the way you've been saying, because they kind of are ready to kind of be that narrative.
Yeah.
Right. Or his idea.
It depends on the kind of executive. If an executive is insightful and has taste, obviously he's going to enjoy it. I mean, right, that's what I'm saying. But a lot of people get caught up, even when we did the show with Maker, right? So many people are about, like, who's the driver? What are the drivers? We need drivers. We need YouTube drivers. There's got to be a driver. So we had to make certain kinds of compromises. Now, fortunately, they were kind of smart enough to let us use Ron Funches, who's an amazing comedian, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. And Josh Brenner
from Silicon Valley,
Angela Kinsey from The Office. So there were good
people. And Kesha,
people.
She was actually.
But then, as one example, there was I won't say who, but a big personality on Facebook. She happens to be from this personality from New Zealand. This is a show about our high school years. What this girl from New Zealand with a New Zealand accent is doing in this high school show in L.A. with a bunch of people who are in the States, not clear, but they said she's got to be in it. The thing with our Instagrams thing is 107,000 for us feels like a good number. It feels like a nice audience. To someone who is only counting numbers as opposed to looking at content, which they should be doing as executives, 107,000, I can get people who do makeup and have 10 million followers. What's 107,000? The problem with that for us is the best you get if you use that kind of mentality is you're like a dog looking for crumbs from a table. You get something that fell off the table with this person who has 10 million. It's like, maybe we'll get like 1,000 likes, 5,000 likes from them that fall off their table and we get them. So
you'll always have to deal with people who are looking for a sheer number and quantity that's greater than you. But that's just then people that we wouldn't want to work with anyway.
Yeah. Now, speaking of that, you're talking about that cast, and that was for Highly Gifted. And in addition to the, who you mentioned, you also have Nat Faxon as well, too, Drake
Yes.
Bell.
Yeah, I love Nat Faxon.
Yeah. He's so good. Yeah, so good and smart.
So when it comes to, and you get the green light on this project and you say, get to start bringing people in, were you writing for, like, let's say Ron Funches? Did you have some, like, him in mind as you start putting this together? Or it's like, nope, this
no,
is something
you know
that's going
to
happen.
You know what we found is if you try to write, we at least sometimes feel if you try to write for, like, someone's voice in particular, or, like, if it's, you know, Ron Funches, you're like, we're going to make it a young black guy. Suddenly you're writing.
Stupid.
I don't know that experience.
It's not for me.
So we wrote what we thought was funny, and then let Ron bring his
That's
entire
his job
experience
as a great actor
and infuse
comedian.
It, which he
In the
did.
Booth, which he did.
Right. Otherwise, it's kind of presumptuous, and it'll come off fraudulent, I think.
Maybe also with more experience, you would be, and over time working with people, I would presume to write more for exactly them, if it was a relationship. But in this case, it was like, here's the template, here's the bones. I wasn't like, you know, like some Edward Albee kind of like, you missed a comma. There's a comma in that play. And there's a, you know, that would have been counterproductive.
That'd be kind of fun, though.
Right.
Doing a project like this where you're writing about your personal high school experience, though, and you bring it in and you have people like Ron and you have Nat Faxon as well, bringing in a lot of their improv and comedy background into it, too. Do you find it like a very much, even though it's your personal story, there are universal truths?
Yes. Yes, and all of the people who you could see such a divide between the kinds of people like Ron Funches who will go into the booth and they'll take the lines that you have and they'll do 20 things with them. Some work, some don't work, but they're thinking and they're going through and it's morphing. And then a different kind of person who some of the, let's say, these drivers or whatever personalities, they may not even want to be in that room. They think that it's like a favor, like people would kill to be in a show, but for them it's like, ugh. And they go, and you get more like if you just make a copy of a file on your hard drive where it's the same take. And then you're
20 times.
Wow. But then you get like 10 copies of that take.
The other thing is it's really a show about kind of, when it comes down to it, powerlessness, which is kind of universal. You know, we're all, on
no matter
some,
where you get.
Some level, whether it's just mortality, our place in the universe is we're tiny. You know, so I think everyone could relate to, even if you weren't the, you know, the nerd in high school, as we were. I'm going to put that in quotes.
Yeah. About you guys?
I mean, you have to put a label on it. Quotes protect me.
Right. No, what we always, the basic core of that show is, I think we like taking received wisdom and turning it on its head. And we always thought that one of the bigger lies growing up, probably still today, is that knowledge is power. Where it's like, that's bullshit. That's just total bullshit. Power is power. Weapons are power.
Looks are power.
Are power.
Right. Knowledge isn't
looks
power.
Are power.
Knowledge is knowledge. And that was great.
And it's great. It's not power. So that's what we wanted to kind of explore.
Now, heading back to the comic, the Instagram account and the cartoons, I'm always curious just in terms of the creative process, in terms of this. So how far out do you guys plan? Is it basically just a day-to-day, or do you kind of come up with, like, oh, you have a notebook, you're writing down a bunch of ideas, and like, oh, yeah, this might be something that I can't quite get now, but a couple weeks from now, it just might kind of trigger something.
It's lots of notes. It's lots of walks for coffee. We're extremely jittery.
A lot of peeing. Yeah. He not only that, but like he's a specialist in this. We both do it to each other. You get home. You've seen each other all day. It's like, I don't have to see him till tomorrow.
That's good.
Thank God. That's good. That's nice. Then the calls start coming. I had an idea. And the only reason he's calling me with that idea is because he's too lazy to get notes out on his phone and write it. So he's hoping if he tells me, I'll write it on my notes.
And it
That's
works.
All it is. That's all it is.
And he has the best part.
Right.
It works.
It works every time. Right.
So you work together during the day and then working on all that stuff and then go to separate corners.
Yes, thank God. Minute.
Yes.
Yeah.
Little
I mean, kind of. We see each other then usually for dinner. So I guess we don't get away from each other.
But between dinner and the end of work is a good 10 minutes.
That's right. Well, I refuse to see him, right?
And since you're juggling this with all your other creative pursuits as well, do you still kind of keep like a strict deadline by, say, 3 o'clock? No matter what, by 3 o'clock we want to have something posted.
We post every day at like from 12 to 1. We try.
On the weekends maybe a little earlier, but yeah.
We probably have, I don't know, 70 cartoons in the bag.
We try to store them up like squirrels with nuts.
Exactly. Yeah. Because then we took a trip recently, and on the trip I'm not doing shit, so...
If the apocalypse comes, we'll be able to post for weeks.
Exactly. It's so a signal.
Doing something like this, did it give you a greater appreciation for all the cartoons that you grew up reading? Just in terms of
just how
you've got to be able to, the process, and how you got to plan ahead for things.
And just the work ethic of it.
The sheer work of it. Because everything, as you get older, you realize everything is work. Everything is work. It's not like the... That's also part of the thing with highly gifted was one of the pitfalls of being in a highly gifted program. And we were in this IHP program. Remember that show, Head of the Class?
Head of the Class.
Yes.
All right, so
it was
based on this program that we went to with Mayim Bialik back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
And then we did the highly gifted program. And I think one of the pitfalls of being in one of these programs is, great, the classes are fine, they're nice, whatever, but you're told or you imagine that you are innately something interesting.
Mm-hmm. And that things are coming to you.
And anything
like the world
you're not
is
going
to come
at,
to me. Yep.
That's right, the world's going to come to me. And anything you're not good at, you just kind of avoid because you don't want to be proven to be shit, which you probably are at everything.
Because you're young.
Yeah.
Because you're young.
You don't
know anything you're also yet. Shitty. And so
through the gifted and talented right. program, they've ruined my life.
Right. I blame them, goddammit.
That's what I'm trying to get to.
Yeah.
Were you guys in highly gifted programs?
I'm sure.
Yeah. I don't know about highly gifted, but yeah, I was in... I was. I think middle... No, I don't know when it started. I think like maybe elementary through middle school, I was in a quote-unquote gifted program. And at a certain point, I think maybe halfway through middle school, I started to... Because the classes were not... It wasn't everybody together. It was gifted, non-gifted.
Right.
So I started hanging out with a lot of the kids that weren't in the gifted program. And I started wondering what... It's like, what is the difference... here between us, and I'm going like, y'all are a lot smarter than most of the people I'm hanging out with.
And they were
what's
certainly
happening?
Happier.
Yeah. No, way
absolutely happier.
Happier.
Yeah. So I started to go, oh, maybe this entire concept is inherently bullshit.
I think that it's a look. There's no question that in some ways it probably is wonderful. I don't know in what ways, really, honestly.
I'm still looking.
But I think it stymies a lot of people from taking risks, from being risk takers. There's the work ethic aspect, which everyone has to learn, which I think is harder for people who go through this kind of stupidity. And then there's also you're completely risk averse.
Well, I would say I was like this until I quit the law firm.
Hence
but
law.
Most of the people that we were good friends with, very intelligent people, but for the most part, risk averse. The choices they made were ones where they're like, I don't want to in any way potentially fail. So it's all very safe paths.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, I remember too, when I started hanging out with a lot of kids from outside of my specific classes, I started to meet a lot of kids that were a lot more into being creative, being artistic. I really did meet young artists for the first time, and I don't mean to disrespect people that were in classes with me that did go on to do creative things themselves, but
yeah,
I definitely...
We're speaking broadly.
Of course.
It was everyone.
I did definitely find at a certain point that all of the people doing the things that I thought were really cool or interesting were outside of that group.
Well, you know what's so interesting is we drew basically from age 4 or 5, took painting, took drawing.
We also were
like always the class clowns. We were performers. But in my mind, I was always like,
politics.
This is a fun thing.
Right.
You draw
politics.
On the side, and then I become a historian. I become a lawyer. I become a politician. Those are the things you become. This
things
is
that
just
you
a
understand later.
A side, a moose
boosh.
Kill yourself.
It's everything that's antithetical to what you are.
Yeah, absolutely. But you feel like you've got to kind of conform to
what I'm supposed to do. You're looking to shit marble or something. I don't know.
I do, actually.
Yeah. One day.
It's a problem.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
So when you decided to do the cartoon, what made you decide, like, or was it just because you appreciated what Gary Larson would do with The Far Side that said, we want to just do one panel,
for the platform of Instagram.
Okay.
It was reduction into a thing that was, the 2 inches by the 2 inches, a square, boom, bang. We've even thought
view
of doing
it, get it completely, assimilated in one view.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, it would be a terrible... First of all, Larson was always our favorite. It would be a bad use just of real estate to divide that little square up further into the 4 panels, which he sometimes did, but he had a book, so it made sense. You could use, that little thing you can do with slideshow.
Mm-hmm.
We've thought about that, but... Well, maybe one day. Who cares?
Right. It's getting very technical. It's getting granular here.
One day, if we're dreaming.
Brother. You can edit live, right?
Right.
That's right. Absolutely.
Okay.
So in the time that you've been doing this, what have you noticed in terms of the way that your comedy and your artistic abilities have kind of developed doing this? It's basically doing it every single day.
Well, I think the turnaround time has gotten definitely quicker. But one of the things we have noticed is, and it's almost to be wary of, is in this, era we live in of instant metrics and instant data and instant feedback, there's something incredibly enticing, but it's almost the enticement of like a drug. you know, of knowing which can be totally cartoons corrupt. Have done incredibly well, which have hit with this age group, that age group, men, women. You can break it down. And sometimes if you respond to that, if you start responding to that, it's almost like you could just start making potato chips.
Path.
You know, you could be like, I'm going to do... We had talked about this earlier, but I'm going to do celebrity acids. You know, that could be a
huge
site.
We have a celebrity ass cartoon,
but
right?
But ultimately, really to what
well.
Point?
Yeah. Yeah.
But, like, for example, we did a cartoon called the Rosetta Phone, where it's, in the future, a phone in the British Museum, and you see the emojis are translated, whatever. It's like 1,000 years from now. It did absolutely awful. Why? Our age demographic is probably about 17 to 21, 22, 23, most. Let's say 50% of them. What's the Rosetta Stone?
Right.
Yeah. That's the starting point. So you kind of have to wear blinders.
You have to
wear blinders, but at the same time, when something really does hit, you get that kind of serotonin rush. So you
exactly.
have to...
exactly. We're like hamsters in a cage. So you're like getting a pellet on the one hand. On the other hand, you have to remind yourself the end game is not
the
Instagram.
It's not the pellet.
And it's also the end game is not even Instagram. The end game is for us is just have a body of work that we respond to and that we love. And that means that sometimes you've got to take the bullet and you know that the guy, it's like he's walking off the edge of a cliff. He's like, I'm going to post this one. And you're like, it's not going to do well. I'm posting it. Fuck it. And he walks off the cliff like... he's like kind of proud, like going down with the ship. That's like right. A captain. He's like, I feel good about it. I feel
right.
good about it.
You always know. You always know when it's one of those posts because the other guy for about 3 hours is like, sometimes you just have to go intellectual.
Yes.
sure. Right. No, right. Of course.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, hold on. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, we actually have a question from the chat here. Sarah Brock has a philosophical question.
Ooh.
How do you keep creating when you just don't feel like it?
That, you know. This, you yeah. know what? That is actually where... Yeah.
Jerk off break?
Yeah, jerk off break.
So many ideas now.
Yeah. Don't give away the trade secrets. <Right. laughs> That's actually, I think, where... And I really wonder, that question, I would almost like to know the answer from someone who's not a twin. Because... There are many disadvantages to being a twin. If we get into those, we'd be here all night. But one of the advantages is that...
It's a conversation.
It's almost like working out with someone else, where you're like, I don't feel like working out today.
Or what it would
I
be if one worked out. I
exactly.
don't know.
Exactly. So there are days where I might be like low energy or he is, but there's someone else kind of pushing you, so you kind of have to do it. If it was just me, that would be a
which goes to what you're saying about Gary Larson, where you're like, do you admire more or have another insight? And it's like, to imagine someone who did the sheer quantity of brilliant cartoons he did
all alone
with no other idiot to sit there and talk to him. Well, yeah.
Is the end goal to be able to have something like, because I did pick that up when they did the big huge compilation, that nice huge sturdy hardcover collection of all his Far Side work? Could you imagine at some point, like, oh, we'd love to have
I
something.
Want to be leather-bound.
Oh, yes. Yeah, leather-bound.
Leather-bound with gold writing on the cover.
Yes.
In a curly script.
Right.
And a smell of sandalwood in the binding.
Right. Something you can unironically refer to as a tome.
A tome.
Yes. Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's going to be the name.
Because what I like about that is that it's just, I mean, that is just such a great volume where it's got his insights on some of the work that he did. Would you ever think about something like that? I was like, if we had something that kind of collected our work, do we have notes and stuff like that about what we were thinking at the time as we were creating some of these strips?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, look, we have all the original sketches. For a lot of them, there would be... But you know what? A lot of the story, the fetal kind of stuff... would be so uninteresting. I remember my brother once telling my cousin a story of how he came up with an idea, and as he told the story, I could see him realizing this is deeply uninteresting.
You know? Yeah. I was committed on the story.
So there we were. And my brother says, we should do this. And I said, yeah.
That's how it happened, yes.
An idea happened
in
my
head.
Damn,
I wish I had a better story.
Made its way to my mouth.
Right. So 70 strips ahead right now here in the bag. Is that, in terms of, for you folks, a comfortable enough number to be like, all right, we can pretty much anything we want, anything could happen to us, and we still have plenty of room to breathe?
Because, listen, things happen like this. I'm in the middle of a funk, people. If anyone wants to help, send something, care packages.
All right.
No, I mean, let's say a few days of, like, I haven't had, let's say, a good one. Or my cartoons have done a little worse than his for the last week. Okay, I don't feel good about that. I want to come back.
Yeah.
I want to come back strong or whatever. The amount that you have in the back, and also you sometimes feel like, Mike, look, the thing is, it's such a beast, Instagram. It's so voracious. Every day you've got to feed it another thing.
So you're like, what happens if you also, if you do get a show? Now we're going to have to keep creating things and feeding this beast every day.
It's a bit of a love-hate, and there's more love, but it reminds me of like when Larry David found out that Seinfeld had been picked up for a full season. He had to write another 13, and apparently he went in his room and just started weeping. So it's a combination of love and weeping, I think.
It's a true description of the creative process.
Right. Alternate title for that leather book.
Yes. Love and Weeping.
Love and Weeping.
Love and Weeping.
And Jerking Off.
You always got to add that.
With a little carrot.
It's a Tom.
And also, when it comes to doing comedy, there are some moments where there's just like an idea that's just in the air. For you two, do you feel like if it seems like low-hanging fruit, we're going to kind of eschew away from it? Or it's like, nope, I don't care what kind of fruit it is. Listen, low-hanging or not, we're grabbing it.
If it elicits enough of a laugh, it could just be the stupidest thing in the world, and it justifies itself somehow. Somehow. And it's really dumb, and it's like, I shouldn't even like this. Like, Jeremy yesterday did one of T-Rex trying to jerk off, and he's got these tiny hands.
I love that one.
Right?
Yeah.
And when I saw it for the first time, I was like, nah, it's too dumb.
But I saw something.
But I laughed. On the horizon. My brother got a far-off look in his eye. Right. So there are times where it's like, it's really dumb, but it justifies itself.
Some people say never punch down. I disagree. I think you can punch any direction you want. What we try to do occasionally when we sometimes get in arguments is if it feels like you're approaching it head on.
Yeah.
Like, it can be something very stupid, but try to at least hook around in a way, unexpected way, a little bit.
Right.
That's more where the argument is.
Exactly.
Or it's like, let this sit and percolate so you can find the way in.
Or if you sense that you're doing something that has really been hashed and rehashed, is out there in the ether in a major way. Other people have all the glory from having done it first. And you, let's say he'll sometimes check me. He'll be like, let's check it. Let's Google check it right now. And he'll check the idea or something. You'll see, look at this. Look at this image search. Look at this. There's three things out there. At a certain critical mass, you'll be like, I'm not touching it. It feels like it's like been spoiled.
It's like the Mona Lisa. Yeah. Unless you can really think of a way to mess with it, it's such...
Which we did.
Certain things are too iconic.
Which we did. We just gave her for a head, and that was it. It was the Mona Lisa, and that was it.
And now we're just chasing that. That's it.
That's right.
It's our whole series about Mona Lisa.
Which is celebrity asses.
And we're back.
And we're back.
It all comes around.
Right. Our new Instagram site. We'll talk later.
Right.
So in terms of the projects that you have been working on, like saying when you're doing Highly Gifted and you're doing this at the same time, is it easy to juggle the two, or is it like we really got to we're up late at night because we're working during the day?
To go back to the masturbation metaphor, everything is spurts. Everything in creativity, I feel like, is like, for us anyway, there are people like
they're down times,
like, who are like very light. Like, it's just tick, 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 tick. We're kind of like a big rush of activity. Let's take a big old
nap.
A nap. A nap. Another nap. Let's go get more coffee.
Naps are very important, I think, in the creative process. Yeah. Very underestimated. It's going to be one of my books, The Importance of the Nap to Creativity.
So in terms of the naps, like, who values more naps? The nap.
We have one couch, so we have to take turns.
That's it?
Yeah. Is that what we, sometimes I'm like kind of like... just like longingly eyeing him I'm upright.
It's been 20 minutes. Come on.
Son of a bitch. You're really hogging it, man.
I'm sorry. I just have that moment from Family Guy where it was like Ben Affleck and Matt Damon riding Good Will Hunting, and Ben Affleck's just laying on the couch.
Yeah, that'd be that. Why don't we try that? Yeah. That'd be a good idea. Good.
Eating
chips.
Yeah.
Yes.
So to your friends and family, has the Instagram account been more of a revelation to them, or like, no, we already knew these two guys were just as disturbed as we thought?
Yes, that.
I think more that.
That. Yeah, that.
We've maybe this validated it.
Yes,
proved it.
Look, there's two of us. So if there was one, we'd be half as inappropriate. That's one. So it's double the sheer quantity of words and inappropriateness and volume and everything. And I think everyone knows, like, we have this huge extended family in Los Feliz, and every Friday night is like the Shabbat Jewish Dorco dinner that we do. And like, that dinner has always been like, we do our thing, our tucka tucka routine. And so this is an offshoot of that for them. I think they get that. Yeah.
And how many pictures are you getting from those friends and family, your extended family? Like, oh, that was, I got an idea. You guys should do
I'll tell you who
this.
Gives me the ideas.
My father.
My father.
But every idea is
an anti-Trump cartoon.
Trump. and they never make sense. I love him.
I love him.
They never make sense.
But they never make sense. It'll be like, okay. He's like this. Here's the idea. I've got a great one. Here's the idea. Donald Trump has a hose, and he's trying to drain Mar-Lago, but the head of the hose is Steve fucking Bannon.
Dry, right.
And you're kind of like, I like it. I like it.
So Mar-Lago is right. in it, and he's in D.C. Yeah. Steve Bannon's a
hose. Water coming out of his...
Right, I'm draining the swamp. It's like draining the swamp. Come on.
A lot of metaphors happening at once.
Just do it. It's great. Please. We've both been saying we really want to do a cartoon that he thinks up, but it's just...
Maybe we just credit him.
Yeah. Right.
But I feel like the comments under a cartoon like that would be amazing. I feel like that would make it worth putting something like
it
that.
Almost would. Like, it almost would. We talk about,
what is happening? They have a dual stroke.
Before we don't, my father has like 20 million followers.
Bravo, sir.
So long, suckers.
By the same token, do you have your friends and family kind of going, yeah, that was great, but did you really need to do that as a strip? Was that a little too much?
Yes.
Yeah, some of the ones that push a little more. There's
a little bit, yes. Like, let's say I think my mother, when we did the Great Wall of China, she was like, do you have to do the wall and draw the lips and the this and that kind of, and all that?
Yeah, because I have something called integrity, mother.
Yes, mother. Right.
Conversation you never thought you'd be having with your mother. I had to draw the lips. You understand?
Right.
Yeah, please.
But the fuzz. Did you need to do the fuzz? Right.
So in terms of this, so you've been highly gifted, you've been working on that. And now in terms of other stuff, what's kind of in the pipeline that you can talk about?
We're developing a show with Jessica Tandy.
fantastic. From the grave, from beyond the grave.
That's the only reason we can talk about it.
That's right,
that's
yes.
the only reason.
Oh, my
No,
goodness.
We're doing some stuff, some shows that we create. We have these show Bibles that we put together going back a number of years.
Animated mostly.
Stuff where it's like the whole thing tells, like, let's say, first person kind of tells the guy's arc and everything. We're developing two of those shows right now with some comedians and people that we love, and we wish we could, but it's just apparently we even checked in with our agents before this, and they're like, nope, it's not the etiquette. So anyway, if they go forward, it would be,
love to update. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In terms of the stuff that you've done with Adult Swim, what is the process of working with Adult Swim like? Because, as somebody that's loved their programming throughout the years, it seems for sort of kind of like a renegade. They're out in Atlanta doing their kind of thing. Is it very much like that, or is it pretty much?
We were in development with one show with them, and we found, which ultimately didn't go forward, but we found it was a little bifurcated. There was
exactly what you said.
Yeah, the group here and then a group in Atlanta, and they kind of were talking a little past each other, we found. But
we were also younger.
They did a good program.
The show may not have been right for them. Adult Swim has a very particular voice.
We don't usually do talking pickles.
I'll tell you another thing. Exactly. We don't do talking pickles.
Or shakes.
Right. I think also, to be fair, it's like they have their metrics, they have their way of judging the whole thing, that's fair, that's the Adult Swim brand, etc. Totally fair. When we write script-wise, we play out scenes. We like a play out of dialogue. We like verbosity. We like things going forward. It's very quick, and things are happening very quickly. For them, it may have been like, this reads like Noah Baumbach or something. Yeah. It's like, what do you send me, the squid and the whale? And that's not, that is wrong. That's wrong for us. Fair enough, sir. Right.
Well, in terms of taking what you were mentioning along with Lex, was the idea of like taking these ideas and blowing them out, kind of creating a world for that.
Yeah.
Do you find it's easier to take these ideas and kind of blow them out? Is it?
Here's the challenge on that. Each one of these, there is the core of a joke. But remember they made a show of Farside? Do you remember that? There was a little show.
It was very short.
An animated show.
I think most people don't.
But tried to do it. You go on YouTube, you can look at it. The problem for me when we were little with the show was it was just the single panel plus time. Which is like,
you know the famous cartoon of the cow doing the V at the Grand Canyon?
Oh, yeah.
The putting the finger behind with the hoof. So it would be that, but just panning over it. So it kind of was a lost opportunity. So the real challenge was making it something different. Something new, and that said something different than just that single panel cartoon.
That's right. It's finding what's unseen in the panel to the left, to the right, up, down, that justifies it now, that justifies adding time, that justifies your 2 minutes.
Because I feel like sometimes I was Saturday Night Live and taking those sketches that you see in the show, and then you take some of those characters and you pull them out into film. You're like, wow, I love that as a 5-minute sketch. As a 90-minute movie, do I really need to see
that? It's terrible.
Except Wayne's World. That one was good.
That was. So the intention to make the rules.
Two great people. Oh. But no, I think that is exactly
the potential downside is it was already probably long as the SNL sketch.
No, it's actually it's insightful too because what you said because we that was something we consciously talked about and what we did when we actually wrote it was some sketches we were like this is a 10-second transition because we were like you know we always loved with Monty Python the way they transitioned mm-hmm. suddenly and they had weird transition bits where it'd be like him in a river and now for something completely different
right
things like that so some sketches we were like this is funny but it's funny as a transition. This is 5 minutes. This is 2 minutes. This is 10 seconds. And if you try to just extend everything, that's when it gets flabby. And we try to really be disciplined about what is this one saying and how much can it say.
Yeah, because you think about, like, talking about SNL sketches and how funny Deep Thoughts was. And that was always that's under right. a minute. Mm-hmm. And
Jack
you don't
exactly.
need that.
Exactly. Yeah. And it shouldn't
one of the
have
best
more.
Things they did. Oh. Exactly. I agree. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about this before we started closing up, is that you also have a store as well.
Oh.
So when it comes to selling merchandise, what do you decide? Like, all right, this is worthy of being on a shirt. This is worthy of being on a onesie for a little baby. We want to see this baby wearing this thing around.
You know what? Speaking of your family saying, like, do you have to?
That's
where my mom saw, like, Kanye. There's
Kanye having sex with Kanye.
Kanye having sex with Kanye.
The Kanye Sutra.
The Kanye Sutra cartoon.
Does this have to be
onesie?
On the onesie?
and that was one where I was inclined to agree.
I was like, yeah.
That
you know what?
It probably could go off the onesies.
You have a point.
You have a point, brother,
on this. I would make a call.
Right.
But it's going to be, I mean, the cool idea is, like, you know what? We're getting some response. We can make a storefront, and people are actually buying merchandise that have things that we've created. In our two heads.
Yes, and what's nice about it for us, or what feels nice, is that it's content being turned into merchandise, which when so often today you have merchandise being turned into content. When we were talking with our agent a while ago, and he was representing the person who was trying to turn Slinky into a movie. Oh. So it's like, that's where we're kind of at, is like
that
someone got the right
thing?
To Slinky.
Like, because there was
maybe
a movie
day.
Parody of making a joke about that.
I
think it was.
Oh,
yeah.
Real. Yeah. It was real.
We're at a place where everything from our president to content is no longer parodyable. It's very hard. Yeah. It's very hard to parody these things now.
Is there a Slinky mythology that I'm unaware of?
I know. How do you create it? I feel sorry for the writer. I the backstory.
I know. Just that writer with like a six-shooter gun and a bottle of whiskey. And it's like,
it's Wile E. Coyote.
Day 30.
Wile E. Coyote would write that.
Yeah, one of our viewers, Sarah Brock, says her current animation instructors worked on the Far Side cartoon. They're Moose Pagan and Annie Bartlett.
Yeah, oh, wow.
That's funny.
They did the animation?
Yeah, for the Far Side cartoon.
Well, the animation was excellent.
Yeah, that part was good, Sarah.
So you also did the contest, winner, chicken dinner. And somebody in the UK won this. So the fact that, I mean, that's the great thing about Instagram, it's, or any social platform, is the fact that it reaches worldwide.
Right.
But to find out that the winner, all it comes from the UK, is that kind of, does that momentarily just blow you away? Sure, you know, it goes all worldwide. But
here's what was so cool. It was surreal in that when we selected her, Daniel goes on, you know, Uber Eats, Amazon
switched to London, and 45 minutes
London,
later,
she's eating a chicken and posting a picture of her with her chicken at her house in London. It was
we just did another contest, Jam Jam for your Gram Gram. We sent a sweet note and a bottle of strawberry jam.
Yes, I was just looking at that delightful
right.
look. Yes.
Mm-hmm. The thing that was funny about that was we got way fewer entries into that because I think our followers were like, I'm not going to fucking let you guys write a note to my grandma. We had like 50 caveats with like, it's going to be appropriate. Mm-hmm. I swear. sweet letter to grandma.
Right.
Well, if you want to write an inappropriate one, another thing we just said to my grandma yesterday was my brother, they asked him if he wanted to come for brisket for 4th of July and he goes, you think I'm going to drive an hour and a half for brisket? I won't even do anything for poontang. So I was like, and my grandma's like, aha. So she would have loved an inappropriate note.
We need people like you. We'll be writing
people
grandma
like you.
Yeah.
That's What the letter that you wrote, was this the first draft, or you feel like you had to kind of dial back some as much as you said? We'll be respectful.
We did dial it back.
We talked to the one of the reasons we chose that winner was her grandma raised her. Mm-hmm. She's in Maryland. Raised her. So we just asked her for some tidbits. So we knew that they went. Loved Motown, so we put that in. They went on a walk on the beach in Chesapeake Beach.
First version that we wrote, we dialed back a little. I think we had a little. It was like, let's just go totally appropriate, which is very hard for us. We
make
that decision.
when we hold back
is about once every 2 years.
In this particular case, the idea of a sweet old woman in Maryland opening this letter and be like, what the fuck? Like, with
well,
like
I don't know she would say that. You already have a wrong.
Well, right.
She wouldn't say that.
Okay, we're not a character. But in any case,
a gene.
It didn't seem nice. It wasn't nice.
We have a great contest coming soon. Just incredible. It's the opposite of this. Very inappropriate.
Oh, Lucretia. Get enter early and often.
I will. Yes. Wow. Now, Reba Jean.
If you like Poontang, you'll love this.
Yeah. That's all I'll tell my grandma. If you like Poontang, you'll love
she
this.
Should enter. She should enter. Yeah. Exactly. Have her enter. Enough said.
Is that one of the things where you had to give it to somebody else, too, after you wrote the first draft? Like, is this appropriate? Is this?
We have a few touchstones.
Somebody field test that
we
for
you. But here's the problem with the touchstones. You could send it to, you could show it to someone who, let's say, doesn't draw vaginas and penises and whatever else for a living,
what
right?
Is this person?
They're going to say, who is this person? Yeah.
This mythical human.
This person human. Usually say it's inappropriate.
But they would say that on everything
right.
we do.
Yeah. And let's say this person's an ER doctor. It's inappropriate in the ER. Let's say they work at a law firm. It's inappropriate in the law firm. It's not inappropriate in my stupid office with him.
Yeah.
So what is inappropriate? Nothing. Really nothing.
It's philosophy.
Just all this philosophy is inappropriate. The whole thing is
guess
just
it
can you pull it
inappropriate.
Off? Right. It's just can you pull it off. That's the whole thing.
So break down your office for me. Is it pretty much like I'm imagining a line down the center of the room and then there's two distinct...
No.
You're thinking facing clacky,
no.
clacky.
Yeah, that's some right. old detective. Door desk.
Noir.
That's right.
Door yeah. desk, side by side, two computers... And a scanner to scan in after we draw.
It's a bit grim. It's a sub-basement apartment. And so if we ever kill ourselves, we'll have to jump up onto
that
the street.
That was a Woody Allen line about his grandfather had to jump up onto street level to commit suicide from his sub-street apartment.
Crosses my mind often. So yeah, we're side by side. It has had one couch.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone wants a visual, it's very hot. So in summer, we're usually drawing in our underpants, ladies.
Mm. All right.
Story coming.
Yes. Yeah. Would you say you're actually in sync completely in terms of sense of humor? Or are there things that one of the
subtle
other kind
differences.
Of...
Subtle differences.
Okay.
Subtle differences.
I think there are some subtle differences,
you're
but
more
I haven't identified them yet.
The big reveal.
You think
he's
so?
He's a reveal man.
That sounds like an insult.
It is an insult.
It sounds like you're patting your resume.
It is an insult. I don't know.
Well, Mia Taylor in the chat says you guys are hilarious. So,
what a sweetheart.
Yeah. If you'd like, I could ask her to rank you.
And she's very smart. Mia's very smart. Yeah. She knows.
Get the rank.
Yeah, one last way. Before we go, we got to know who actually is better. That's what we're going to decide right now between Jeremy and Daniel. We'll decide conclusively, everyone.
I'll take this. I'll take whatever this answer is.
Mia Taylor is the final word.
No whammy. Big bucks.
I know. I'm like, come on. Just tell us which one's funnier, Mia. And also, anyone else here, feel free to vote.
I'm actually, like, I realize my heart's racing.
I know. I hope
she comes
through for us.
What are we doing? Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm going to walk out and
I'm laughing here, but this is the highlight part.
That's it.
Yeah. if he wins, I know what happens. So he's going to be driving, kind of smugly whistling. And looking at me out of the corner of his eye, waiting.
And magnanimously say, it didn't mean anything. It didn't mean anything. That doesn't mean anything.
Right. Yeah, she's like, oh, God, the pressure is on.
Mia, you got to pick one of their feelings to hurt.
You know, and that's the thing, is I can do a Twitter poll, too, if you guys really want to know. And we'll tweet the results.
So now coming up here, you get the rest of the summer. Do you kind of, you're married, do you have kids as well?
Two kids, one kid.
Boys, one boy, yeah.
Man,
so in terms of juggling with summer, I mean, you've got the kids as well, too, kind of off school right now, so...
Oh, my God, is that true?
What have we been doing? They've been in the car.
I have to make a call.
Holy shit, I have to go.
They've been in the car the whole time.
I have to go, right.
Yeah, it's like,
I gotta go. Speaking of being in the car the whole time...
to camp, Daniel has to take...
You know when you're really little, your nightmares are like monsters. And then you go to high school and it becomes... And all the way past college, it's like, I missed the final.
I
missed my class. Once you have kids, I notice the nightmares all become like, I'm on a hike and the kid is gone. And she's like, where is he? And it's like a cliff. And you're like, I don't know. And then you wake up like exhausted and drained and like just sweating. Anyway, tidbit.
Well, that's a beautiful mood killer for the end of the interview.
Becoming parents, has that opened up a whole new kind of venue for comedy? Or you're like, we don't want to do like the parent kind of comedy. We want to stick to more of our stuff.
No, nothing that we're working on right now has anything to do with parents. If it was organic and it comes up, yeah, sure.
I think there have been a few
things. We've done a few comics. Rarely,
if it comes up naturally. Sometimes that feels like such trod on ground that, again, it would have to be
Listen,
a different way.
I remember when I was a kid hating parent comedy and the feel of it. Just the feel of like, oh, the kids, they're so hard. I'm going to get to bed late or whatever. It felt stupid and it didn't feel interesting. Of course, there's a way in. We've done it a few times. But it's not a go-to.
It's like Danny Tanner versus the real Bob Saget. You didn't really think Danny Tanner was funny, but real no. Bob Saget's
but hilarious. Real Bob Saget's hilarious.
Yeah.
It's hilarious.
Yeah.
Exactly. And if they would have put that guy in that weird San Francisco house, that would have been a great show.
Oh, yeah. And that's what they wanted.
With everyone else in a normal family. Yeah. Right. Just with the little
dirty mouth Bob Saget in there.
The twins. That little girl.
That's a great show.
Cut it out guy, and then he just going off.
See, the real Full House. Now it's a comic. And we do have some chatter here. Klaus Horiander. I'm really bad with German, so I probably butchered that. Sorry, Klaus. But he says Daniel because he's biased, because he worked for Ducati.
Yeah. I love you. I love Klaus.
And Sarah Brock said, hold on, she's gay. She's got to find a coin. So, you know.
We're merely going by just the looks. We're not talking about, like, you know, the...
Yeah, I know. And Mia Taylor's like, just let Twitter handle this one. It's too much pressure for her.
She bowed out.
Wow. So, I mean,
so I win.
Yeah, by that was
one vote.
I
won my one vote. Oh, it's a squeaker.
That was, whew, look at that. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be wrapping up this episode of the Comic Book Exchange, but the fun doesn't stop here. It just continues. So, if they want to, other than the Instagram account, where's the best place to follow you guys online to figure out all the shenanigans that you two are up to?
Okay, so there's at Lehrer Boys, which is L-E-H-R-E-R Boys, and that's the where you can see what's really in our brains. Then there's Lehrer Boys Shop, which is on www.lehrerboys.com.
Which is also our website.
Posters,
and
t-shirts.
And we're on Twitter and Facebook, too,
a lot of inappropriate stuff.
Nice.
But okay.
And hopefully show stuff, announcements to come soon.
Right.
Particularly with Highly Gifted and a couple others.
And we've got a contest on the horizon as well, too.
A highly inappropriate contest.
Oh, man.
See you there.
Yeah. All right.
Lex, Michael, where can they follow you if they want to just talk about everything under the sun with you
me,
as well?
If you want to talk to me about the coyote and the non-masturbating dinosaurs, you can find me all over social media at the Lex Michael.
Yeah, ditto. You can find me at LexCretiAlyon anywhere on the internet, since there is only one, guys.
I've always wanted to be able to say that about myself.
Oh, yeah.
One day, maybe.
One day.
One thing we can't say.
I forget, Spider-Man Homecoming, as we talk about comic books and things like that, that's coming out this week. Are you guys excited about Spider-Man Homecoming?
I love big movies like that. I'll tell you,
big comic book movies.
When you work all day, like, doing this shit, I do not want to watch a Holocaust movie. I'm sorry, I don't
want to see someone dying slowly.
No,
of a disease.
I want to watch Spider-Man.
I want that.
Exactly.
All right, what was the last comedy you went out to go see in the theater?
In a theater?
Yeah, it's stuff with kids. It's stuff with kids, for sure.
Trading Places? I'm kidding.
I'm current. I'm with it.
Yeah, that's right.
Kid kids with a Z.
Because I went and saw The House. And
how was it?
What do you think?
I love Jason Mantzoukas, and it was great to see him get a bigger billing in there, but it just, it's like a fun idea that's not executed as well as I'd hoped it would be.
Mm. Yes. I could totally see that from the look of the poster.
There you go. They definitely embraced their casino-ness. Throughout the course of that the film there. Ladies and gentlemen, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at HappyGoJackie. Our guests today have been the Lehrer Boys. We've got Jeremy and Daniel. We've the award-winning Daniel from the Comic Book Exchange.
Exactly.
That's right. Yeah. Bask in those accolades.
The fix is in.
And that
so goddamn
accolade.
Happy. So goddamn happy.
Follow them there on the Lehrer Boys. And folks, we'll see you back here next week with another edition of the Comic Book Exchange right here on Book Circle Online.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much.
From managing editor Jason Squamata, executive producers Maria Menounos, Phil Svitek, and Kevin Undergaro, we would like to thank you for tuning in to Book Circle Online. For more discussion, go to bookcircleonline.com. And if you have comments, questions, or book title suggestions, write us at info@bookcircleonline.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this is Book Circle Online. BCO. Join the circle.